Come September when the blind man takes your hand, says, don't you see? Gotta make it somehow on the dreams. Yeah, still be.
From Ames, Iowa, welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we're a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And today we're going to talk about why I don't shop with Amazon. And there's a number of reasons for it. And what brought it to my attention is that I was in a board meeting with a fellow broadcaster colleague, and he was surprised that why I didn't shop at Amazon. And I told him I had some real differences with their business model and some of their actions, and he said he wanted to know more. So anyway, I thought I would explain it on today's show so not only he can understand, but also you, the listeners, can get some insights into a quite simple on one level and quite complex topic on another level. So anyway, but first, before we do that, as we're always apt to do, we're going to talk about some of the things in the news. Most of them are not well covered, but the first story that we're going to talk about today certainly is. And we have it first primarily, I guess, for the comedy of it. It's not comedy. It's tragic, or perhaps tragic comedy. But Donald Trump is now the leading Republican presidential candidate. Almost one in five Republicans are supporting Donald Trump. The actual number is 17%, according to a USA Today poll. And he's leading Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush, he of $100 million. But Donald Trump is leading him 17 percentage points to 14 percentage points. And then it falls off dramatically to Scott Walker with 8 percentage points. And then it goes Cruz, Rubio, Carson, Paul, Huckabee, Christie, and no mention was made of Fiorina or Pataki or Lindsey Graham or a number of others. But, you know, Donald Trump, go for it. You know, just go ahead, put your platform out there, and I know you're going to steal the show at the debates. I mean, it's great. The Republicans, you know, if they support you, then God bless you, and God bless the Republicans. This is what they're all about, and it's front row center in American political and governmental discussions. So, Donald Trump, congratulations for your lead. Wall Street on Parade, one of my favorite groups of people, WallStreetOnParade.com, they came out with a story. And as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, the Chinese stock market is in a free fall, and the Chinese government is trying to prop it up every way that it can. But Goldman Sachs CEO, their leader, Lloyd Blankfein, came out and he said, oh, you know, Chinese stocks are great. You know, they're still a great investment. They're wonderful. And he tried to talk them up a little bit. But Wall Street on Parade wrote a wonderful article and talking about how Goldman Sachs is heavily invested in the Chinese stock market. And Goldman Sachs is maybe trying to just cover their losses, which have to be extraordinary. I know the stock market in China has lost somewhere near around $3 trillion in value. Goldman Sachs has to be taking a hit. So whenever you see these kinds of stories, there's something else going on. Republicans are all over and against this Iran deal because they're afraid that Iran will eventually get a nuclear weapon, I suppose, if after all this time and we normalize relationships and if we're still enemies, we'd have to negotiate another deal to prevent them from getting a nuclear weapon. But whatever, you know, they have their issues. It will be negotiated. It will be discussed. But there's an interesting side effect. This deal in some ways will hurt Iran. And I'll tell you how. First of all, you know there's an embargo against Iran, and where countries, if they want to participate in the world banking system and, you know, be part of the world economy, they have to toe the line and not deal with Iran. And so technically they couldn't buy Iranian oil. However, you know, just as a sidelight, the truth is China has been buying the Iranian oil. The U.S. government knows it. And I remember July 5th on, because it was the day after a holiday. That's when the government releases its nastiest little reports, the day after a holiday. But they acknowledge that China was violating the embargo, but they said that's okay because they're doing their best, essentially, to, you know, they're easing up how much oil they purchase from Iran. So, It was just a total double standard, but anyway, that explains that Iran was still realizing revenue from its oil sales. China was helping them out with that, and the U.S. government said fine. But a couple years ago, the price of a barrel of oil was $150 a barrel. Do you remember that? And most of that, what people don't realize, the professional oil speculators said it's because China had a demand for oil and it was driving up prices. But the truth is that it was strictly a financial profit-making issue. It was a situation where speculators were driving up the price of oil, and to deliver the oil so much that was under speculation, it actually drove up the spot price of oil. So a couple years ago, oil was $150 a barrel. Last year at this time, it was $105 a barrel, and now it's only $53 a barrel. Well, with the Iranian oil now, with this new trade deal coming online, and with Saudi Arabia just pumping oil like crazy, everybody's afraid that the price of oil is going to go down even further. So Iran, whenever it introduces its oil into the world market, not just the Chinese market, it could really create a glut of oil globally. So the price we pay at the pump will go down, but there's some Middle Eastern countries that are not going to do too well in this regard. Another story. You remember last week the New York Stock Exchange went down for about 3 hours or so? It was just... nobody could figure out what it was. They were worried it was hackers. They were thinking cyber terrorism. A number of speculations came out, and it turned out that it was due to a faulty implementation of new software. But there, again, as we're always as we always do, there's a sub story here, and the sub story is that the New York Stock Exchange was bought in 2012 by an organization called Intercontinental Exchange. And whenever companies buy another company, they often take on debt. And so what they do in order to pay the debt is they cut their staff, they cut their expenses in order to make ends meet with the new debt load. Well, this Intercontinental Exchange, and it's known as ICE, ICE cut 800 jobs, which is about 40% of its workforce. And so with the 40% reduction in workforce, the quality standards are gone. It's a story we hear every day. You know, we experience it every day. In these corporate takeovers with debt, they increase their overhead so much that they have to cut staff and they have to rush to cheap. They have to rush to profits, and quality and reliability at the New York Stock Exchange took a hit, but quality and reliability in all American businesses are taking a hit with our rush to cheap. Here's a new story that's coming out. Last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked with Richard McCormick of Manufacturing Technology News, and we talked about the exporting of manufacturing. A month or two ago, we talked about the exporting of U.S. defense research, and we acknowledge that it's a major problem. And we brought up the example, actually Richard brought up the example that, we can't even make a circuit board in the United States anymore, hardly at all. You know, the circuit board, the little board, the computer chips that process all this information. It's in a garage door opener, it's in your phone, it's in your refrigerator now, it's in your dishwasher. It's in your coffee maker, these chips. And we can't even make those in the United States anymore. And we talked about the defense significance of that. And it falls on deaf ears with the government. Well, it turns out now there is a Chinese company that's preparing to buy one of the leading American makers of memory chips, Micron Technology. Now, these memory chips are different from those processing boards and processing chips that we talked about. The memory chips are, you know, the memory that's in your, it's in your phone, you know, all your phone numbers, you know, all your contacts, all, you know, everything. It's in your computers. Anything with a memory is contained in memory chips. So now it's not good enough for China to be making the processors. Now they're going after the memory chips, and they're offering $23 billion for the ability to buy the American company, and they would effectively control the memory chip market in addition to the processing chip market globally. Another frightening situation, and the size of the deal is more than five times the Chinese previous large investment in the United States, which was about $4 billion for Smithfield Foods, the largest pork producer in the world, and China now has that. Now, the consequent, it may be rejected by the government, but it may not. It may go through. I suspect there will be political pressures at work. I expect that there will be lobbyists, including that former Montana senator who's now a lobbyist representing Chinese businesses. But here is what happens with this. Okay, we have a U.S. manufacturer, and then the Chinese buy it. Well, the shareholders are the ones who would make money off of this, and they're content to make money off of this. They negotiated the sales price. They're willing to do it. But it just shows the lack of patriotism amongst these corporations. If it's profitable, they'll do it without regard whatsoever to American interest. Sad situation. We will, of course, follow that. Another story came out, and it's a good one. And we have to tip our hats to all Americans. J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo and all these others, they acknowledge that Americans are paying off debts. The percentage of loans that these big banks couldn't collect, you know, the kind of like foreclosures and mortgages and cars and things like that that they couldn't collect, it's down to about zero. And so Americans are paying their debts off, and that is a good thing. Because you remember we reported, maybe 2 weeks ago, that the total debt now in the United States, I mean, student loans and credit cards and mortgages and the U.S. government debt, everything is about 333% of GDP. And it used to be 360% of GDP. I mean, we're bringing it down, people. It's great. It's a wonderful situation. So good job, America. You're doing some good things. I'll tell you what, I have another story that I wanted to talk about, but I think what I'd like to do is I'm going to save that towards the end of the show. Now, the story is about Air Force drones, and there is a pilot shortage for drones. And it's an interesting story about and how it's reported differently in the media. And let's talk about that towards the end of the show. But after the break, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about why I won't shop at Amazon. And I think you need to hear this because there's some factors in there for you to consider, too. All right, well, you're listening to the Tim Danny Show here at Danny.com, and we'll be right back.
That only love can fill.
Teddy Roosevelt said, "Of all forms of tyranny, the least attractive and the most vulgar is the tyranny of mere wealth." This is why antitrust law and competition is essential to America's economic health. This is why the Organization for Competitive Markets works to reclaim competition for farmers, ranchers, and rural communities across America. We believe our duty is to advocate a just role for government in the agricultural economy, an enforcer of rules necessary for markets that are fair, honest, and accessible. The Organization for Competitive Markets. Learn more at competitivemarkets.com.
Walking all morning, when walking all night.
Our government should be open. It must be accountable to the people. And we demand access to vote and our votes be counted and verified. These concepts should be common sense in our democracy, but they're not. Some would deny us these rights. But people died for them, and Common Cause works every day to make certain they did not die in vain. Join Common Cause. Keep your rights and hold political power accountable where it should be, the people. CommonCause.org, holding power accountable.
Can't see much difference between the dark and light. I feel the wind, and I taste the rain.
Welcome back to the Tim Danny Show here at Danahy.com. And in the prior segment, you know, we talked of a number of things. You know, we just like to cover the news in the first segment. We talked about, you know, how America's paying off debts, and we talked about Donald Trump, and we talked about the Iranian deal and oil prices. And so, really, we kind of gave you a heads up on a number of issues. So I hope you're well-armed with those and can share those as you see fit. But I mentioned that at the very start of the show that one of my colleagues was surprised about Amazon, that somebody would actually have a objection to Amazon and would not buy from Amazon nor frequent Amazon. And he wants to know why. And I said, you know, I should talk about that on the show, because I suspect that there are a lot of people out there that really don't understand more than Amazon is the cheapest price and it's delivered to your door, and therefore people think it must be good. But there's another side to that story, and this other side is multifaceted. So I'm going to go through it in a couple different ways. First, let's talk about the economics of Amazon. Now, when you buy local, and we'll use books as an example in this case, because that's how Amazon kind of got its start, and then it branched out into all kinds of things from there. I mean, it's Amazon has turned into retailing the same as Goldman Sachs has been in financial services. Any place that they can stick their bloodsucker into it, they will. So, but let's talk about the economics, and we'll use books as an example. When you buy from your local bookstore, and I'll even include Barnes & Noble in that, and years ago I would not have, because Barnes & Noble and your local bookstore invested in your community. They built a building. They leased a space. They hired employees. They built the shelves. They invested in the inventory so you can browse. They keep the lights on, and they keep the doors open for you, you know, from morning to night. You know, they're committed to you and service to the community. And when you buy local from your local bookstore, in Colorado it's Tattered Cover, in Washington it's Politics and Prose, or Prose and Politics, in New York it could be The Strand, you know, there's local bookstores everywhere. But when you buy local, 45% of the profit gets reinvested locally. So the money comes back to you. You know, I know you want instant gratification with Amazon's immediate low price, but the truth of the matter is, if you want a healthy community, in fact, let's make it plural, if you want healthy communities around the country, you buy local and watch that 45% of profits being kicked back in. And you're thinking, well, what if I go to Walmart and buy the book? Well, the truth of the matter is, if you invest in a big box retailer, whether it be Walmart or Target or whomever it might be, only 18% of the profit comes back into the community. The other 82% goes back to Arkansas or New York or wherever, for example, Walmart's profits go. Only 18% stay here. 82% go out of the neighborhood. But when you get something from Amazon, what do you think stays in the community? Well, the number is close to zero. The only thing that really stays is perhaps the guy who delivers it. He spends 30 seconds getting out of his truck, dropping it on your front porch, and back. That's the extent of the return on Amazon. Amazon is bad for a community because there's no reinvestment here. It doesn't make long-term economic sense to buy cheap whenever all the money is, you know, we complain about outsourcing, but when you buy from Amazon, you're outsourcing money from your community to Amazon, and they use it for different purposes. But I'm even going to shock you a little bit about Amazon here in just a little bit. So you're thinking, okay, well, Amazon doesn't do, you know, isn't good economically, but surely Amazon generates sales tax for the community, same as the local retailers. Well, no, they don't. Amazon does not pay sales taxes. Your local bookstore does. Those sales taxes go back into your police and schools and water districts and wherever, you know, into the community's general fund to help pay for services. But not only does Amazon not pay, but they have a huge national lobbying effort against sales tax. So they don't pay property taxes. They don't pay sales taxes. That creates a huge competitive advantage for pricing. And furthermore, their efforts are so vast. You know, the rule is if you have operations in a state, then you are vulnerable and sales tax can be assessed. Well, what Amazon does is they rate states like red, green, and yellow depending on sales tax. And so they only pay sales tax in 5 out of the 50 states. And then they prohibit their executives to go into these states without other states without permission, those other 45 states, because they don't want to appear like they have operations in these states because they would have to pay sales taxes. So they're really gaming the system. Amazon is, so they're not reinvesting in your community. They're not paying sales tax in your community. They're not hiring in your community. They're not paying property taxes in community. They're simply dropping off their low-priced product in your community. And that's the extent of what they do. That's the economics of why I will not shop at Amazon. But there's a freedom of speech issue going on with Amazon also. And Amazon, to fulfill their current business model, they need to have the lowest prices. And by doing lowest prices and you buying from them, they have achieved a substantial market share of books that we're using as an example. And to keep the low prices, Amazon is putting pressure on the publishers and the authors to take less. They are hurting the publishing industry in America, and they're hurting the writers. And the way Amazon has been doing this is if a publisher tries to show some backbone or a writer tries to show some backbone, Amazon gives them a lower level of service, meaning they fill the orders slower. They don't promote it. They don't have the connections or that other thing. I think they have something, if you like this book, then try this one. They don't put it out there. And so they're effectively using their excessive market power to force the publishing industry to lower their prices so Amazon can lower their prices and theoretically make more money. Furthermore, what Amazon does is that they tend to favor conservative authors. And Paul Ryan is an example. When Amazon was embroiled in the disagreement with Hachette Publishing and some other publishers, you know, and the services for the other publishers was just tanking. They couldn't get their books exposed. They couldn't get their orders filled as fast. But meanwhile, guys like Paul Ryan came out with his book, and it was promoted, and it went out immediately, and there were pre-sales and offers. And Amazon, in essence, censors free speech in the United States because of their market control and their ability to emphasize or de-emphasize authors and publishers in this country. And so, you know, and they think, well, Amazon, you know, they have the Kindle and they offer e-books at a low price. Well, they're in disagreements with that too. And they're driving the prices down where the authors are making less and less. But even worse is that when you get the Kindle, Amazon reserves the right to go in there and remove content or edit content if it doesn't suit them. Authors are banding together, hundreds if not thousands of them, trying to get the government to use Department of Justice and antitrust enforcement against Amazon, but naturally Amazon has authors or has lawyers and lobbyists that are fighting against the publishers and authors. So there's this, a freedom of speech issue and an antitrust issue that I won't buy from Amazon, in addition to the economic issue. But there's another issue out there that is significant, and that is workplace issues. The working conditions that Amazon subjects its employees worldwide has been deplorable. There is the famous story, I believe it was in Minnesota, where Amazon is so deathly afraid of the employees stealing things. Remember, they pay their employees just a little bit over minimum wage. Amazon is a low-price employer, and they work them to death. The employees are GPS tagged. They keep track of how long it takes to fill an order. They keep track of how fast the employee is walking or how slow he is walking. It's constant surveillance. The employees, whenever they fulfill the orders, they're cogs in a machine, really. But the heat in the warehouses, Amazon wouldn't pay for air conditioning in these warehouses, and employees were dropping like flies because Amazon wouldn't open the loading dock doors, the big bays, because they were afraid the employees might walk out with a CD or something. And so they kept all the doors locked. The temperatures were rising, and employees were falling like flies. So what was Amazon's solution for this? What they did was park an ambulance outside one entrance. So if an employee collapsed in the working conditions, they would have a paramedic there rehydrate them and get them back on their way. That was Amazon's solution until the public outcry was so great that they finally said, okay, we'll pay for air conditioning in our warehouses. But people didn't realize how Amazon tries to force down the cost of labor. And they suppress labor rights around the world. And whenever somebody protests about, could we make more money, or could we have relaxed labor standards, or just anything with labor rights, could we unionize, Amazon calls them selfish. And he says, you got to think of the customer. You can't think of yourself. And so there's this cult of customers that Amazon creates, and they will not tolerate labor disobedience. In fact, some people say it's worse than even Walmart. That's how bad it is. And then there's another thing in regards to labor, just to show you how Amazon treats their labor. I think it went to the Supreme Court, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, it went to a high court. And Amazon, what they do, before the employee has to punch out on the time clock, and then they have to stand in line and be security checked to make sure they aren't stealing anything. Well, Amazon won't hire a lot of security checkers. They have like one station. And so the employee has to punch out and stand in line for up to 45 minutes waiting for their turn to show that they haven't stolen anything. And Amazon would not pay them for that 45 minutes, but they were detaining them for those 45 minutes. It went to court, and I believe it was our Supreme Court said that that was within Amazon's rights, but you and I both know that that is no way to treat an employee, to have them punch out and then make them wait 45 minutes before they can leave the building just because you're afraid they stole something. Just horrible labor attitudes at Walmart. So we have the labor attitudes is a reason I won't shop at Walmart. We have their market control issues and censorship issues and antitrust issues is reasons I will not shop at Amazon or really Walmart too, but... And then we also have the economic reasons and the sales tax reasons and the reinvestment in communities reasons that I will not invest or buy from Amazon. They're not good people. One last thing, too. And Ronnie Moas, he's the owner and head of Standpoint Research. He's one of the most accurate investment analysts in the world. And he's been on the show a couple of times, a good man, very principled, just a good guy. But he points out quite well that Amazon's business model, Amazon doesn't make any money. What they are trying to do is reduce the prices so far that they just drive more and more businesses out of business. Amazon figures if it can use its public relations machine, if it can use its lobbying and influence on government, and their acquisition of media such as the Wall Street or Washington Post, they're trying to drive all these businesses out of business, all these competitors out of business, so they can eventually raise their prices and then they can be more profitable. It just, they don't make money, and they're willing to sell at a loss to drive their competitors away. So Amazon has a bad business model, too. So Amazon has a bad business model. They have bad labor issues. They are using censorship. They're controlling the market, manipulating the market, and using antitrust issues. There's economic reasons, and they don't pay their taxes. So if you want to know why I don't shop with Amazon, that's why. And that's the story, and it's been that way for years. I pay more in order to acknowledge the service and the commitment of my local businesses. And you want to know something? The local businesses, they earn it. I get it back. And I am proud to shop locally. So Amazon, I never shopped from you before, I don't think, and I do not plan to. All right, that's my rant on why I don't shop at Amazon. You're listening to the Tim Danny Show here at Danahy.com, a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the drone story and how it's reported two different ways. It's really interesting. It's sad. It's heartening. It's frustrating. It evokes a number of emotions. I think you're going to enjoy it. You're listening to the Tim Danny Show here at DannyHe.com. We'll be right back.
Comes a time when the blind man takes your hand, says, "Don't you see?"
Why? Why do you send your food money to faraway factory farms and industrial ranchers distributing through megastores headquartered in other cities, other states? It doesn't make sense. You can keep your dollars local. Help your local farmer, your local rancher, your local retailer, your neighbors. And it comes back. Your commitment to the local food shift means more money stays in the community and is reinvested here, reinvested in you. It's easy and it's smart. Go to localfoodshift.com. Learn how to buy local and watch it grow here. Localfoodshift.com.
All the dreams you still beat me. Don't give it up. Got an empty cup.
A good man, real people, clear thinking, enjoyable, quality talk. A new name, EgbertoWillies.com. He talks politics, he talks issues. And you can hear his radio shows and read his blog at EgbertoWillies.com. You can link to him here at Danahy.com. He's also part of CoffeePartyUSA.com's network. Or, if you can spell EgbertoWillies.com, you found a new voice you'll want to hear. EgbertoWillies.com.
Only love can feel.
Welcome to this episode of DannyHe.com's American History Minute, a one-minute story about little-known events. And here's today's story. In 1863 at Gettysburg, Joshua Chamberlain and the 20th Maine Infantry were ordered to hold the southern end of the Union line. If he failed, the Confederate Army would collapse the Union line and encircle the north. Gettysburg would be lost. The battle was furious and bloody. Chamberlain was malarial and wounded in both legs, but he led his men on the front line until his men ran out of ammunition and defeat was imminent. Chamberlain simply said, "Bayonet," and his word spread down the line. So, without bullets, Chamberlain and the inspired men charged the surprised Confederates and held the Union Army's southern flank. As a result of Chamberlain's courage throughout the Civil War, Ulysses Grant selected Chamberlain to accept the flag of surrender from Robert E. Lee at Appomattox. Upon receiving the flag, Chamberlain's men did not yell, cheer, or shout at the defeated Confederates. Chamberlain and his men silently snapped to attention and saluted. They saluted courageous fellow Americans. The world learned that America would once again stand together. This story has been provided by the Tim Danahy Show. Please like us on Facebook at Tim Danahy Show and follow us on Twitter at hashtag Tim Danahy Show. And thank you for listening at Danahy.com. Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at DannyHe.com, and we're on quite a ride today, aren't we? We've talked everything Donald Trump. We've had a rant about Amazon, why I will not shop with Amazon. And I saved this last story for last deliberately because I don't know which way this story is going to go here on the air. So let's just put it out there and see what we have. The Wall Street Journal announced kind of like their subheadline, page A4, on Wednesday, July 15th. They said, "To lure drone pilots, Air Force plans incentives." And I'm going to read just a couple things from here to kind of set the stage for this story. And it starts out in the Wall Street Journal, a story by Gordon Lubold. It says, the Air Force is taking steps to address a chronic shortage of drone pilots, sweetening the allure of flying the unmanned planes as part of a plan to alleviate the strains of the job as it tries to meet demands for drones and the video intelligence they provide. And then it goes on to list what the Air Force is planning to do. It says the Air Force, they're planning to give Air Force pilots thousands of dollars in bonus pay if they sign up to fly the remotely piloted craft for 5 years or more. So there's a shortage of drone pilots, and so they're saying we better pay more. Later on in the article, there's two paragraphs that kind of give the numbers involved with this issue. It says the Air Force has struggled to keep up with the demand largely due to the service's inability to identify, train, and retain enough drone pilots. The service trains about 180 such pilots a year, but loses about 230. As a result, the next paragraph in the Wall Street Journal says, as a result, the pilots complain of being overworked and overstressed. On average, drone pilots fly up to 900 hours a year compared with fighter pilots who are in the cockpit at an average of 250 hours a year. That's the story. And we should mention that, you know, they keep track of the numbers, and they said how vital the video intelligences that they provide. That's how the Wall Street Journal, which is owned by News Corp, which is Fox News, that's how the Wall Street Journal reports this story. Now, the New York Times reported this story a little bit differently. It acknowledges the shortages, the numbers are the same. But the New York Times talks about the pilots and quotes the pilots. Whereas the Wall Street Journal talks about the video intelligence, the New York Times pilots quotes talk about how they have nightmares about children in lakes of blood, how they look at the faces of innocent people who are collateral damage. They look at that the people getting killed, not for video intelligence, but for missile strikes. And so the New York Times put together this really powerful story, and you can see the bias on this. One was more clinical and said it was for video, and the other one said that these pilots are quitting because their consciences are kicking in. They can't do this. Now, we've done a story about how wildly inaccurate and how these drones are legally blind, and how, you know, innocent people are getting killed everywhere around the world because of these drones. And that's the true story of this. There's no due process. There's no verification on the ground. There's no fighting back. This is strictly a airborne issue, and they fly and they kill their targets to the best of their ability, but they aren't really positive with their identification of the targets either. And the drones are despised worldwide. Pakistan, Afghanistan, Yemen, all of them are saying, America, we love you, but please stop the drones. Innocent people are getting killed. You're creating terrorists. And so that's the political aspect. But again, the real story here are the pilots. They're training, they're hiring 180, but they're losing 230 a year because they can't do this kind of killing anymore. Just a tragic and heartrending situation. And it also illustrates the differences in reporting in the United States on these kinds of issues. I tell you what, let's take one more break, and then we'll squeeze in one more story, and then we'll call it a day. I appreciate you hanging here with me on these various stories. I hope you're finding them as interesting as I do. You're listening to The Tim Danny Show here at DannyHee.com. We'll be right back.
From day to day, just letting it ride. get so far away.
You preserve a nation one community at a time, with shared knowledge and an informed electorate, with many voices speaking with civility and integrity. And we will preserve our nation when we participate, we learn, we discuss, we vote. We are the Coffee Party USA. Join us today. CoffeePartyUSA.com.
How it feels inside. You can't let go, 'cause you're afraid to fall.
Forgiveness, a second chance. It's hard for anybody, but imagine how hard it is for someone who's spent time in America's prison system. Our public and private prisons have more inmates than the rest of the world combined. And when they're done serving their time, what then? The Second Chance Center helps transition lives to success and fulfillment. They prepare men and women to enter the job market with new skills. They help former inmates to improve communication, learn conflict resolution, and be better parents. The Second Chance Center, teaching skills to those who commit and work to be welcomed back in our communities. Donate now, today, at sccolorado.org.
But the day may come when you can't feel at all. Comes a time.
Welcome back to the Tim Danny Show here at danny.com. And boy, are we talking about a bunch of things in the news, and I hope you're enjoying that. We're talking about them in a different way. You've got a different point of view on Amazon now, and you're seeing the differences in the reporting on stories like the drones. And I said, let's do one more story before we call it a day. And this is a big story, and this is another one that for which we're all aware. And America's infrastructure is in horrible shape. The American Society of Civil Engineers estimates we have deferred maintenance and repairs to the tune of about $2 trillion through all of our budget cutting, our rush to cheap, and our unwillingness to tax where we can in order to pay to keep America's circulatory system, our nervous system, our bone structure, to keep America healthy. We haven't done it. It would have created jobs. The interest rates have been close to zero. We could have financed it for virtually nothing, but we didn't do it, and we didn't do it because of politics. And so now we have a deadline coming up. In about 2 weeks, the highway authorization of the Spending Act expires at the end of July, and it's running out of money, and the government spent like $96 billion on infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, highways, roads, things like that, bridges, in 2014, $96 billion. But that is down 21% in constant dollars from 2002. So where we have more roads, more cars, and things like that, the spending, the maintenance of our own country has fallen 21% in the last 12 years. Tragic. And a lot of the funding to maintain our roads logically comes from the gasoline tax. The property tax does it at vehicle tax does it at a local level. But on a national level, we've always had a gasoline tax, and it's been 18.3 cents a gallon. And it's been that way for a long time. And that's been the main source of money to fund infrastructure, maintenance, repairs, and truthfully, expansion. But what's happening is that cars now, great, have a higher mileage per gallon, so people are buying fewer gallons. There are issues like, there's more electric vehicles that don't have to pay the gas tax. And also, you know, just inflation and the cost of maintaining the roads. And so trust fund spending for highway maintenance has exceeded the revenues by $60 billion. And so our Congress and our Senate is sitting here saying, well, we got to do something, you know. We've got to maintain our roads, don't we? And, well, yes, we do. And so what they're doing is they're coming up with different alternatives. And they refuse to raise the gasoline tax, and I don't know why. But they won't raise it to help fund the roads upon which the gasoline is consumed. Instead, people like Paul Ryan, you know who he is, but I think Chuck Schumer is working with him on this thing. And what they want to do is change the international tax, or repatriate some tax, lower the tax rate, something. There's some sort of gimmick out there where they're trying to take the money that is earned overseas and not use it for general fund or whatever we need it for in the United States, but put it directly into the highway fund. So if some business earns money in Japan, the money that they are taxed would then be used to pay for roads, with some sort of logic to that. But Paul Ryan goes on to say, he says, the country needs a long-term plan to fix our roads, bridges, and other infrastructure, and this bill gives us our best shot at completing one this year. I'm not so sure. It has turned into a political nightmare. Once again, we're getting down to the last weeks, days, and hours before this thing can be resolved, and our roads continue to erode, our bridges continue to fall, and as former Secretary of Transportation Roy LaHood said, he said, America has turned into one big pothole. This is no way to run a country, and I'm sorry, I am not impressed with the efforts to try and restore the highway trust fund in this country. Write your congressman. Let them know what you think. You know, should we increase the gasoline tax? Should we increase the amount of taxes that wealthier people pay? Is there a different way? I don't know. And the sad thing is, neither does Congress. Okay, that's been quite a ride. Let's call it a day, and we will be back, and I want to thank you for listening to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com.
Only love can fill. Only love can fill.
The Tim Danahy Show would like to thank Aaron Taylor of SRC Labs for production management and outreach strategies, and Presonus, a leading designer and manufacturer of audio recording software, hardware, and related accessories, available at Guitar Center. For Edward Danahy for post-production assistance, and for all the stations and affiliates who carry the Tim Danahy Show. And lastly, to Theodore, the studio bull terrier, for his quiet companionship.
Only love can fill.